through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Curtis, do you remember yesterday when Jake was shocked that listeners could hear him screaming in the background to start a show, and then listeners texted in after
we
that.
We can totally hear you.
Not even being like, yeah, Jake. They were like, no, Jake, we can all hear you. We can all hear you, Jake.
If that's your attitude on radio, then just imagine what Curtis and Stacy have to go through every day just before we hit the airwaves.
I am 4 feet away from Jake when he's screaming.
If you think you can't handle that, Stacy, then you can't be on a football field. Okay.
Ow.
I think we kind of knew.
You can't handle that energy.
I could be cut out for football. You guys have seen me run.
No. I'm not talking physically. I'm just talking about just getting yourself psyched.
See,
getting yourself hyped.
I think
and
I'd
jacked.
Be like cool-headed Eli Manning. You know
really?
What I mean? Yeah. Ice school Matty Light.
You and Cody Barton have the same spirit animal that you guys just talk everybody's ear off beforehand.
What's wrong with that?
Like you're trying to be in the zone. You're trying
to see this. It's like,
what's
dude,
the problem?
I'm trying to get the play in.
Like I've got my headphones on. I'm listening to music. I don't have time to talk to you right now.
We're in the huddle, and I'm like, hey, did you watch The Bachelorette last night?
No,
wasn't that wild? You're like, we have 10 seconds.
You
want to
know your horoscope?
And I'm like, did you read your horoscope today? It's wild, man. Now take a listen to this. I pull out my phone. What are you doing with your phone? We're on this. What? I could see that. It checks out. I've taken us off the rails successfully. I'm going to get us back on there because I have a question for both of you guys, for me as well, but for everyone listening. What makes a trade successful? Like, what makes for a successful trade? There are different levels for this because if you trade for a quarterback, for instance, that's going to have a more obvious impact on your team and a more obvious correlation between success or not than trading for a wide receiver. Or whatever. But what makes for a successful trade?
Well, I think one of the things that makes a successful trade, just right off the bat, the most obvious thing is that when you trade for a player that you are able to get, in return, great impact for your team, right? That it could be a star. It could come in the form of a star player. It could come in the form of a surprise player, right? But whatever you get in return, that player, that impact is great. It's tremendous. It turns your team and improves it from not just, let's say, bad to good, but it's got to be good to great. That is what makes a great trade. The other thing that ends up standing out is the value you end up getting, right? So let's go back all the way back to the Herschel Walker trade back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of return that the Dallas Cowboys got for that Herschel Walker trade was tremendous, and they were able to use that capital successfully. You have not seen a lot of franchises. Like, let's look at the John Gruden and the Vegas Raiders. The Khalil Mack trade. If you go back years and years from that point and say, wow, the trade values that they got, the draft capital that they got, they were able to turn that around into star quality players that help them get to the playoffs and help them win a Super Bowl. That is the mark of a great trade. So that's where I kind of come into, you know, that side of it of great trades.
It's funny you say that because as you were talking about it before you even said the Raiders trade, I thought Khalil Mack, but from the point of view of the Bears, where I was like, he remains one of their better, if not their best, defensive player. I wouldn't say that the Bears are in a great spot. Like, they could be firing their entire coaching staff after this offseason, depending on what they do, and going into a full rebuild, right?
Like, absolutely.
You can have a trade where you get an objectively great player, and if it's not at the right spot, maybe it's a bad trade. I think that's what Mark Ross gets at when he talks about Jamal Adams. And I'm not saying I agree with Mark Ross, but it's a fascinating point. He says that if he were the Seahawks, he would consider letting Adams walk after this offseason. And I know that what you're thinking is, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You gave up 2 first-round picks, the most you've ever given up in a trade under John Schneider, and you're going to let that guy walk? Cut number one. Take a listen to what Ross has to say.
You know, I think Jamal Adams is a fantastic player, but Seattle has already given up so much for him. The 2 first-round picks, a 3rd-round pick, and a player in Bradley McDougal when they traded him, got him from the Jets. And when they made that deal, I said, this has got to be a Super Bowl type defense for Seattle. When they make this, you give up all that capital for a player like that. And Jamal Adams, although the defense got better, he didn't transform the defense. And the big part about him, the worry, is his skill set. I mean, he's essentially a outside linebacker slash pass rusher. He's not a true free safety, but he still is the best pass rusher on that defense. And I just don't see them being able to make a run with the top tier contenders and giving that significant money to him, which will limit what they can do elsewhere on the roster where they need improvement.
There are so many things that are fascinating about not just this take, but about the Jamal Adams trade. For one, if you were to ask me, hey, objectively, what area on the field would you like to see the most improvement from Seattle defensively that you think would make them a contender? Outside of saying something in the secondary, I'd say probably the pass rush. Well, here you have a safety that helps your secondary and also helps your pass rush. It should be something that seems like such an obvious fix for you, such a clear, not even a Band-Aid for your defense, a salve for your defense that should have made sense. I think that it is worth mentioning that Jamal Adams' coverage grades in years prior have been higher than this past year. So it's hard to tell whether this past year is the aberration or the norm. And I think that 2021 will tell us a lot about what he can be as a coverage safety. But on paper, you seem to have solved quite a few problems with the trade of Jamal Adams.
Yeah, as I'm thinking about this, there's so much meat on the bone that I don't know if we're going to get to all of it. So we may have to come back to this later in the show. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what Mark Ross is saying, first off, the idea that Jamal Adams is a glorified outside linebacker pass rusher is just not simply the case. There's not outside linebackers out there that have the physical skill set that Jamal Adams has as a safety. I fully believe that Jamal Adams can be a great all-around safety that can affect all three levels of your defense. That's why you trade all that capital. Not every safety. They might be great in coverage. They might get you interceptions, but they don't come up and fill the gap like Jamal Adams does in the run game. They can't rush the passer like Jamal Adams can. So there's a lot of uniqueness to Jamal Adams' game that isn't easily replicated by other players around the NFL. So let's stop like Jamal Adams isn't a novelty. He is. He is a guy that does very unique things that can be game-changing type of attributes. So a lot of what I attribute to Jamal Adams is, first off, why did you trade for him in the first place? Mark Ross, he says that you don't trade that type of capital unless you think that this is the piece that gets you over the top, right? And in a traditional sense, that means that you have an established defense, a core group of guys, and this is the add-on, right? And that is the normal thing that you typically see with a high, flashy, you know, big-time trade like Jamal Adams.
And I know that, I don't mean to interrupt, I know that there are people that would say, what's the big deal? It's a late first rounder. If you don't think a first round pick anywhere is valuable, at least in some sense, do yourself a favor and never become an NFL GM.
Yeah.
Continue, Jake.
No, they do. They do value that. And look at the position that we were in this last draft. I mean, you only had, what was it, 4 picks? So you're using that capital and it's costing you. It's costing you the ability to maneuver. It's costing you the ability to get cost control players for your team that could eventually maybe be stars. And I know you're looking at the past and you're saying, oh, LJ Collier, Rashad Penny, and this and that. I get it. I understand where you're coming from. You have a point to make there. But in terms of Jamal Adams, why was he brought here? It wasn't to be the add-on to a great defense. It was to be one of the core group of guys that you build around. He is one of your young stars that you build around. You have Bobby Wagner, you have Jamal Adams, and you build around that core group of guys. Why? Because they can be tone setters. They can be guys that alpha leadership that can make your defense significantly better and can raise the standard for everybody around you. What have we talked about with this defense for the past couple years? They've had no bite. They've had no swagger. Sitting there, and again, I will reference this to the cows come home, 2019, heading into that training camp, Brock Huard and I sitting on the sideline watching that defense. As putrid as that defense was, there was no energy, there was no swagger, there was no juice. It was completely foreign to everything that I have experienced watching that defense and being in practice with that defense with all those alpha competitors and Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas. You go down the list, it looked nothing like it. And that's not the identity of Pete Carroll and this team. You needed somebody like that. You needed a fire starter like Jamal Adams. And let's go to cut number two. You need leadership and guys that are going to demand more from your team.
Communication is the main thing. And just knowing our swagger, knowing who you are. You know, as a human, you can't forget who you are in this world, right? If you're confident in what you do, if you feel you're the best at what you do, you got to keep that swagger and that intensity at all times. You can't never let anybody knock you off your pivot. The marathon continues. I always say that, you know, no matter the wins and losses, no matter how much adversity you go through, you got to keep going. You can't listen to the outside noise. You got to keep going. Keep your head down. Keep grinding because, you know, it's always light at the end of the tunnel. And that's how we approach everything.
You need a leader like that. You need a guy like that that has that swagger, that has that confidence, who brings that juice and that energy to your team. So that's number one. And number two, you're building around this guy in your future as you're looking into your crystal ball as to how this defense goes. So Mark Ross, I think, is off on, and we're going to have him on the show, by the way,
yeah,
at 1:30.
I should mention that. Mark Ross coming on with us at 1:30.
And we're going to ask him. We're going to ask him and to dive deeper into that, why he thinks that way, what he thinks that the Seahawks should have done differently or what they should do differently moving forward to go along with that opinion. But I think with Jamal Adams heading into year two, this is a massive year for him and this defense to get on the same page and be who they are. Because the second part that what we're not going to be able to get to is to why Jamal Adams's impact wasn't just the seamless transition for this team in 2020 and why it needs to be that type of impact in 2021 and why I think it can be. But we'll save that conversation for another time. But Stacey, I think that when you look at this in this trade, ultimately where this needs to end up though is not just him being a contributor with this team getting into the playoffs. They've been doing that. This trade needs to propel them forward, getting deeper into the playoffs, getting to a Super Bowl. That's going to be where this trade is based off of in terms of success.
This trade needs to be making your passing defense most especially better. And I say this knowing that it's something that is going to rub people the wrong way, but your pass defense last year was pathetic. Capital
yeah.
P, pathetic, underline, bold, italicized. I mean, it shouldn't be. I think that what happens is because we've been watching this team for so long, we don't realize that the defense is miles away from where it used to be. And it's especially easy to forget that it's miles away from where it used to be when there are obvious studs on defense. Jamal Adams is a stud. He's a baller. Bobby Wagner's a baller. KJ Wright, not on this team, he's a baller. It's easy to look at these guys and be like, why would I not think the defense can be great? They had moments last year when they were great. You also finished your season averaging 285 passing yards allowed, and it doesn't matter that the bulk of that was in the first half of the season because it still came back to bite you at the end of the season. We're going to be getting back into it. Right now, we got to jump into headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Marco Gonzalez taking the mound tonight for the Mariners in Coors Field against the Colorado Rockies. What is the real headline?
Marco Gonzalez has a chance to get right as a struggling pitcher facing a tough lineup in the most hitter-friendly park in baseball.
Yeah.
Recipe
Let's go.
For success.
You know what? It is a chance.
The comeback is today.
It starts now. Comeback kid, Marco Gonzalez. Now, I say that tongue-in-cheek because obviously Marco Gonzalez has what it takes to be a great pitcher. We've seen this before. He was your ace heading into the season, and I keep reminding myself that he missed the better part of a month due to injury. And so I'm telling myself that Marco's still there. Your ace Marco is still there. Maybe I'm in denial. Maybe I'm delusional, Jake, but am I counting on this outing being the one where he gets everything right? No, and a lot of that's because of the setting. But I sure hope he starts to turn it around because the hot and cold of this rotation has been so tough to deal with as a fan, and I know yeah. it's even tougher as a player on this team.
It's like a splash of freezing cold water. It's a slap in the face. We're talking about the difference between any given pitcher that's starting in this rotation right now versus, you know, the front end and the back end. And Marco, look, I think the reality is that Marco's not going to be your ace. He's not your ace-level pitcher anymore. I think that when you look at Logan Gilbert and what he's done and the stuff that he has, he is really turning into your ace. Yusei Kikuchi has shown that he can be, with his talent, his ceiling is more than what Marco can bring to the table, but Marco is still a very good pitcher in this league. He is still a guy that can go out and get you very competitive outs. He can be a great elite number three guy in a rotation He can be a guy that you can count on, and that's something that has been very disappointing this season as you've watched Marco Gonzalez pitch. It's been tough. It's been very tough. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've been curious about with Marco is that you paid this guy not just because he was a stabilizing force for your team, but he was a leader. And how is he managing and holding up mentally when he's not your ace, when he's not pitching like your ace, or that maybe he won't be your ace of the future? Is he able to still maintain that fiery personality, that leadership that we have all come to love out of Marco? And he's going through a lot. He's going through a lot in his life right now, and I just want to see something positive happen for him because he is a great teammate. He is a very good pitcher in this league when he's at his best. And if this team wants a chance to get at the wild card, they need Marco Gonzalez to turn this thing around in a hurry.
Headline rewrites.
Big NFC West news this morning. Rams running back Cam Akers will miss the 2021 season with a torn Achilles. What is the real headline?
In which Todd Gurley receives a very awkward, "You up?" text from Sean McVay.
I mean,
I didn't want to.
Wow.
He's getting the late
night. He's getting the late night.
Got to reach out. Yeah. Sean McVay has got it. You got to reach out to the ex, and it's just like, hey, remember how we ended things super awkwardly? Remember how
funny, right?
Yeah. You remember how we benched you in the Super Bowl? That was forever ago. Let's make things right. I feel awful for Cam Akers. I think that this is something where, as a Seahawks fan, you'd be forgiven for not knowing how important Cam Akers would be to the Rams' offense, especially since they've kind of gone by a running back committee approach the last year or so since having Todd Gurley at his best. So I think it cannot be overstated, though, for LA, how important, how huge and impactful this loss is. I feel awful for Cam Akers. I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to say it's good news for Seahawks fans. Injuries aren't good news for anyone. It's a bummer, but this is hugely impactful to the rest of the NFC West. I can't overstate that.
Yeah, no, it is. It is a big impact. And look, they've got a good backup running back in Darrell Henderson Jr. It's not like they're going to the scrap heap at this point. They've got capable guys in their backfield. They had three running backs that had over four yards on average per carry. Malcolm Brown, Darrell Henderson, and Cam Akers. And those are impressive numbers. Now, they didn't necessarily generate the touchdowns that you would love to see from your running back group, but Cam Akers in the second half of the season, he was your second-round pick for the Rams last year, and he really, really started to come into his own in the second half of the season. There were high hopes, high expectations for Cam Akers as a running back, as a pass catcher. He was going to be a major piece to this offense, and it's a big blow. It's a massive blow. But if you're Matt Stafford and you're as great as everybody's saying you are, and mm-hmm. Sean McVay and this crew, this shouldn't slow you down completely to a halt. You should be able to still work around this, but it might not be as explosive as it could have been. My heart goes out for Akers.
Headline rewrites.
Adam Schefter with this tidbit on Aaron Rodgers and where that relationship stands with the Green Bay Packers. Hold on. Here we go.
At some point this offseason, the Green Bay Packers offered Aaron Rodgers a 2-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for 5 more seasons, made him the highest paid quarterback and player in all of football. And Rodgers did not take the offer. And there right there is the proof that you need to know that this is not about money. This, over the course of the next week and the discussions that they will have, the two sides, is about figuring out a way that Aaron Rodgers would be willing to show a camp so that he could eventually leave the Green Bay Packers.
So, Rodgers reportedly turning down an extension offer that would have made him the league's highest paid quarterback.
Wow.
What is the real headline?
If the Packers didn't already know Aaron Rodgers was afraid of commitment, they could have just reached out to Danica Patrick and Olivia Munn.
Ooh.
I would have told you everything you need to know. It's an easy joke. It's all hanging through. It's always
nowadays.
He is quite the roster.
Can I just say, I hope we have Aaron Rodgers headlines every single day.
They're always...
Stacey just goes
savage
to the core of this man. Oh, my goodness.
It's one of those things, though, I think, where are we all expecting? I have gone back and forth more than any other player this year on whether or not I expect him to stay in Green Bay. I'm on the expecting him to stay there right now, and this is just weird offseason stories because he's stopped caring. He's got senioritis in Green Bay. He doesn't care anymore. He's not going anywhere, and Green Bay still technically has control. But he's also like, I'll show up when I need to show up.
Right. This is why I kept saying all along that Aaron Rodgers is going to play for the Green Bay Packers. There's no incentive for the Packers to trade him other than it just being really, really uncomfortable. And Aaron Rodgers has done everything humanly possible to make it as uncomfortable for the Green Bay Packers in that front office as possible, to the point where you just hope that they get emotional and they just say, heck with it with Aaron Rodgers, and we're just going to trade this guy. They didn't do that. So now you're at a point where Aaron Rodgers is like, okay, being traded to the Denver Broncos during training camp isn't going to be a benefit to me. There's still a very, very good football team here for me in Green Bay this year. I'm just going to ride out this season.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have any friends, no new friends. I'm just going to be with my guys in my locker room, the coaching staff, anybody.
And Shailene.
Hey, Gutekunst.
Like Miles Teller,
Murphy,
too.
Yeah.
Don't come down to the locker room. Don't come down into the players' meetings or any of that stuff. We don't want to see your face around here. So they're going to get through the season. Aaron Rodgers will get through the season, and then he's gone. Like that's the way that I thought this was always going to go. But there were times that Aaron Rodgers made this so uncomfortable that maybe I started to have some second thoughts along the way. But he's a Green Bay Packer this
year. Raise your hand if you guys are looking forward to next year's offseason rumors that the Packers will make a move for Russell Wilson. Anyone else expecting those rumors? They're coming your
way. Put your hand down. Put your hand down.
Stay tuned to 710 ESPN Seattle as we're giving away Mariners tickets all day long. So listen for the cue to call and you could win two tickets to the July 24th Mariners game at T-Mobile Park. That's this Saturday, and it's the Mariners retro jersey night when the Mariners host Oakland, and the first 10,000 fans will score powder blue jerseys. Don't miss out. Get tickets today at Mariners.com. Mike Salt coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Mike Salk joining us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, we were talking about Jamal Adams to start our show today. Basically, does the Seahawks defense have to be dominant in order for that trade to be considered a success? The reason we bring it up is we were talking about a quote last week that Mark Ross of NFL.com had, where he said the Seahawks basically should cut their losses. Just get rid of Jamal Adams. Don't pay him. He didn't make you. Now, Jake and I have our own opinions about that, but we're going to be talking with Mark Ross later today to hear a bit more about what he has to say about Jamal Adams. What's your immediate thought on that?
Well, I disagree. First of all, if you were going to quote unquote cut your losses on Jamal Adams, the time to do that was before the draft when you didn't have any draft picks.
Correct.
Not now, heading into next year. I don't know that I buy that. You could always cut your losses after this year if that's what you're going to do. So I just disagree with that fundamentally, that would be the best way of handling Jamal Adams. But as to the bigger question of whether or not he makes your team better, I don't know, man. I watched them play with Jamal Adams and without him, and they sure look better with him.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's saying, he's not saying do it now. He's saying basically cut your losses by not paying him. Let him walk after this year.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't.
Why can't you?
Because you need to recoup. You can't give up two picks, two first rounders, and then let the guy walk. That's a fireable offense. We've talked about it before. John Schneider would be digging his own grave if he did that. I don't care. I understand the idea of not throwing good money after bad, or bad money after whatever the phrase is, but you can't do that. Honestly, that's a fireable offense. So if you've decided and determined that Jamal Adams isn't your guy, fine. Then you should have traded him before the draft and recouped as much as you could and say, okay, that didn't work out, but at least we only dealt one first round pick for him because we get another one back and we live to fight another day. You cannot give up two first round picks like they did and a third rounder and then let the guy walk away.
And Bradley McDougal.
Yeah, that's an absolute non-starter. Non-starter.
Let me ask you this, because this to me is more of the storyline that's going to end up happening. We all anticipate that this deal is going to get done. Like I fully believe that this deal is going to get done. That is not my concern. That is not my worry whatsoever. My concern is that you have a group that's still young, that's still formulating together who they are, right, as a defense. They struggle in the first half of the season. They're putrid in the first half of the season. They get better. They find their rhythm in the second half. Now you have Jamal Adams potentially in a situation where he's not practicing. He might not even be there until this deal gets done.
Yeah, you should get it done sooner rather than later.
How big of an issue is that?
Well, it's a really big issue. We've talked about this because part of what drew you to him was his leadership. I mean, I remember talking to people inside the organization when they made the deal for him. They love the way he plays on the field, don't get me wrong. But the thing that made them go the all-out extra mile for Jamal Adams was what he does to your group as an organization, the intensity and the energy and the toughness that he brings to the table. Well, if you don't have that for training camp, you're missing part of what gave him the extra edge for you. So to me, that's a guy that you've got to get done. Like you've backed yourself into this corner, right? And now you have to do it.
That's why anybody that tries to act like the Seahawks have the ability to play true hardball in this situation,
I don't think they do.
I can't get on board with you. Mm-mm. He has all the leverage. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you're going to pay him $20 million. Like, he doesn't have that leverage. But the idea that people are going, I don't know if he's going to get close to 18, I think he is. He's got them in a tough mind right now.
I agree with you 100%.
I mean, it's pretty bad. So that's one of the things that I am, like, out of any of the storylines, I'm the most anxious about for this team. But, Salk, I want to shift gears here because I know you've been doing a lot of work and you're getting ready for this draft coverage with the
I'm
Kraken.
I'm deep into this, man.
You are, man. I know you're
I was using a simulator last night. Like, I was all in, like, checking to see if it fit under the cap. Curtis is familiar with this, I'm sure. I'm sure you do that stuff all the time.
CapFriendly.com.
Yeah.
I've got a great one.
I was deep into that last night. Well, it's kind of hard to do, I will say. Like, you know, we were talking a little bit about on the podcast this morning that you can't just assemble an all-star team, right? You've got to get guys of all different levels and abilities, et cetera. And the cap, that CapFriendly.com will really let you know, because I tried to do and I was like, okay, I'm going to go off the board here with one. Like, I think it was Matt Duchene or somebody like that, that nobody has mocked to them. But I was like, I like that player. Maybe I'll just stick him on there. It's an extra four. Yeah, sure enough, by the time you get to the end, like, oh, you're over the cap by $4 or $5 million. Like,
and then it turns your computer off and gives you a bug. And
yeah.
Like, you can't do that. He told you not to do that.
I just bring that right back to Bonneville.
But then there's a little trick that you can do where instead you just put that player on your long-term injury list. It's
right.
That same little trick.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
That same
so here's a few things before the draft. And we're doing the whole draft show tomorrow night. I can't wait with Bob and John Morosi. One, I'm out on Carey Price. I don't want him.
Why?
I think that a hip injury is too scary for a goalie. It's really, hip injuries scare me in general.
Do you want Tarasenko?
Do you remember when Roosevelt Colvin injured his hip? Do you remember that name, Roosevelt Colvin?
It's like a Patriot.
No.
He was, but first he was a Colt, I think. I forget who he played for.
Now, is this when the Baltimore Colts were a thing? I'm just gauging based on the...
It was not that long ago.
Got it, okay.
Raymond Berry.
Roosevelt Colvin was a pretty darn good player, and then one day he stepped wrong, blew out his hip, and he's just done. Those types of injuries stay with me, and so you start thinking about a hip injury with a goalie in particular and the contract that he'd be owed. I know it's an exciting name, and I know he's got some local flavor to it. I don't think you can build a team based on guys who have played locally. There's other good goalies available. They've been linked to Dreger in the past. I think that's where they should go and just ignore Carey Price. Tarasenko, I will admit, still intrigues me a ton. I know he's also got a shoulder injury, and that's been an issue. And people have kind of gone back and forth as to whether or not maybe they'll take him and then deal him or something like that. If you can get him without having to pay the full contract, and that sounds like a possibility, I just think the goal scoring and creativity is so great that you probably need to do it.
Do you think they're encountering a different landscape than Vegas did? Like, the thing is, I know that the NHL is making it where it is an incentive and a benefit and all kinds of advantages to the team that is doing the drafting. You pay $100+ million
right.
to be able to do this. The league's not going to make it difficult for you to be good, right? So there's only so much that other teams can do that they couldn't do with
Vegas.
I think
it's pretty similar. I don't think, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers, and when I start putting together a team, it looks like a team that looks top 15 in the league, and then it depends on whether or not you get hot at the right time. I mean, some of the players that I'd like to see them get are guys that play on playoff teams. James Van Riemsdyk is a really legitimate goal scorer. Jordan Eberle scores 20 goals every year, and he's available from the island. Islanders. I think he's of all the players, he's the guy I want the most. I really want to see them come away with Jordan Eberle. I think he'd be a fantastic addition. There's grinders and muckers. There's captains available. There's two-way centers like Yanni Gord. So, I mean, you kind of go through what they can find. They can get, Landeskog's a legitimate captain. Giordano's a legitimate captain. Gord's a legitimate two-way centerman who could be in a top six. You've got legitimate big defensive players. You've got 20 goal scorers. So I think that they absolutely, goalies that can take them where they need to be, both veterans and young players. I really think that they should come out of this with the very least a playoff caliber roster, and then you see what happens once you make the postseason.
Now I'm going to tell you guys where they can hear you on the day of the expansion draft. Obviously, spoiler alert, it's here, but we've got a special going on. But are you going to have anything on 710 Sports or
I'll have a column up tomorrow morning. I'm not doing a full mock draft. I'm not going
to
pretend.
But you'll have
like
some info for people that want to follow it.
Ron Francis, you talk about this over the cap stuff, this friendly cap.
Yeah. Deal.
They said that they went through 100 simulations.
How could they not?
Were they going through the same thing that you were doing?
Yeah, they're basically doing the same thing, except they have a lot more knowledge about who these players are and a lot more at stake.
Okay, so Mike having something on 710sports.com tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning.
Okay, at 710 ESPN Seattle, we'll be tweeting out links to that. Also, don't miss a minute of the Kraken expansion draft with 710 ESPN Seattle. Join Bob Stelton, Mike Salk, and our NHL insider, John Morosi, for live pick-by-pick analysis as the Kraken officially come to life. Listen this Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Tomorrow's going to be fun.
Our most important Seahawks countdown continues at the top of the hour. Before that, though, Marco Gonzalez, please, we need you. Go into that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Marco Gonzalez and the Mariners open up a two-game series against the Rockies tonight. First pitch is at 5:40 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 4:30 right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Speaking of Marco Gonzalez, he has not had the best return in his time from injury and was going to start the season, we all knew, as the Mariners' ace. And we made a joke about it in the headline rewrites yesterday. Just as we all would have predicted, this was the joke, just as we all would have predicted, it's Chris Flexen and Logan Gilbert as the two best parts of the Mariners' starting rotation in July. No one would have said that. If you would have asked either of us in April, in May even, hey, who's going to be the best two pitchers? Who do you think? We'd say, oh, it's going to be Marco, your ace, and it's going to be Sheffield, who had a phenomenal season last year. Instead, you've had Sheffield with some regression. You've had Marco just dealing with not being Marco on and off after injury. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the time for him to get right. He's going to be pitching in a very hitter-friendly park, but it needs to happen soon because this Mariners rotation, for all the good that you've seen from Flexen, who's been such a pleasant surprise, from Kikuchi, who has had some struggles, and we'll be getting to that on another day, but has been your all-star, from Gilbert, who's been a phenomenal rookie, for all the good you've seen, you've seen injuries, you've seen regression, and you have seen, in kind of a combination of both of those, a disappointing season, especially latter, for Marco.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, you see all career lows. I mean, he's 1-for-5 on the year in terms of win losses. I know for all the deep analytics people out there, ERA isn't necessarily all-encompassing stat, but he's almost at 5.88 ERA. You look at his WHIP, 1.465. All of his numbers are not where they need to be right now. And one of the other things, too, is his best pitch from last year. I think everybody's been kind of trying to play it off like, oh, Marco, he's really smart. He's trying to, stay one step ahead of the curve when he's a location pitcher. But the fact is his best pitch last year was his cutter. It's been one of his worst pitches this year, right? Just hasn't had the command. And for a guy that has been so fiery, so competitive, has been a stabilizing force for this team over an unstable time. That's why they gave him the contract. That's why Jerry DePoto, Scott Service deemed him as one of the main leaders of this ball club. It's tough to watch him go through this because the team really, really needs Marco Gonzalez right now if they're going to really, truly be competitive in the second half of the season. And you would love to see Marco have this bounce back. Look, I'm not blaming this at all. But like Marco's been through a lot. He's been through an injury. He just had a baby. You know, he's a new dad, and you know, some of the transition that goes along with that. I played some of my best ball when Jackson was born, so I'm definitely not saying that that's an excuse to not play well. Not
I've
even
done some of my best
that.
Radio after Willow was born.
I've said that a million times. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's just you wonder what's going on. Is he still battling the injury that he was trying to come back from? Is there a confidence issue? Like, it's just very odd to see Marco in this place right now. Because this isn't the type of player that you've seen from him over the past couple years. And, you know, he's not going to go away. They're not going to all of a sudden DFA him after this year if he continues to have on this bad, bad streak here. You know, he's still under contract for a significant number of years. But they need him to be a part of this thing. They need his leadership to come through. And that only happens when you're feeling confident, when you're feeling at your best. And so Marco Gonzalez's impact isn't just felt in terms of his performance on any given day that he's on the mound, but also the leadership within the clubhouse.
Yeah, and that can't be stressed enough. He's 1-5 as a starter this year, like you said, a 5.88 ERA. It's not great. That's through 11 starts. So I think we said a while ago, hey, what, you know, if Logan Gilbert is your ace, does that change your rebuild? And as part of the conversation, the three of us were like, hey, if Marco ends up being your like fourth starter, that's actually a pretty good thing, because it
yes.
means you've got three guys better than Marco Gonzalez, who's your current ace. And it's not a knock on Marco, it just means that like that means you've got guys with like just like killer fastball or something like that. Like it's just you've got legit. Like any club would have this guy as an ace if Marco is like number four or five. I said that, but I didn't want for Marco to not be part of the rotation, because he's had such not just excellent command as a command pitcher, but like you said, Jake, that last point's so important. He's been a huge part of that clubhouse leadership in one of the youngest clubhouses in baseball. And the plan was never to have him not as part of the rotation. I mean, I think the hope was always like, what if you have someone that's even better? That'll be good for you. That's not bad news. And so I'm going to make a mental note to myself not to read too much into his outing tonight. Again, Coors Field, Curtis and I were just saying, like, make the home run derby there every year for a reason, right? Like, just bombs.
It's not exactly tailored towards pitchers like Marco Gonzalez.
No.
It's not. And that's okay. Like, I'm not reading too much into this. What I do hope, though, is that you have a better August, certainly. And not only that, but you start talking about the things that have been pleasant surprises for your rebuild, like Logan Gilbert's ceiling, which is higher than I thought it would be. What you don't want is someone you weren't is someone that you were planning on having as that rebuild, Marco Gonzalez, being worried that you won't be able to have him.
Yeah.
And it's too early to say that, but you don't want to be worried about it.
Right. You can't have your stabilizers all of a sudden go to nothing.
Right.
Like, you're trying to build around these things that you are that are known commodities. Right. And so that's the thing that I think with Marco that is the most disappointing up to this point of the season. And it's not to say that he can't turn it around. We're all rooting for him that he can. You talked about the climate, the ballpark that is the Rockies. Also, the Rockies are a significantly better team at home than they are on the road. I mean, it's unbelievable how good they are in terms of you know, how good of hitters they are at home, probably for a reason. But I think with Marco, the other thing that sets the table for this as well is the fact that where do you do moving forward? And I know yesterday I talked about that this team needs to add, and there's no surprise. If this team really truly wants to contend this year, if they want, and I don't mean that as we're going all in, but if they want to be competitive this year, that might be the better word, and they want to contend the following year, they need to add to this rotation. They need to add another really good stopgap pitcher, and that is with the idea that Marco is going to be a part of this thing, that Marco Gonzalez is going to be, in terms of your third or fourth guy in the rotation, somebody that you can bank on to give you really good competitive innings. And we're not asking for Marco to all of a sudden be at the top of his game, go from a struggling pitcher to being the top of his game, and that's what we need out of him. Actually, with this ball club, the way that they have been so scrappy, you just need to give them a chance. You need to give your bullpen a chance. Just get us to 5-6 innings, and you're golden. You're good. You've done your job and keep the game in range. That's all that we're asking from a guy like Marco Gonzalez, and in the back half of your starting rotation, if they get that, done, they give your team a chance to win a game.
Yeah, your bullpen's been so good. Your relievers have been great. And again, can't stress this enough. Hector Santiago, local hero, still on that 10-game vacation, 10-game suspension. You can't replace that spot. So, like, even outside of us wanting to see Marco improve, you're going to need your starters to go deeper into games so you don't have to go through those bullpen arms just as quickly, because you're going to be short one guy. This hour of Jake and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. By the way, we want to send you guys to Saturday's Mariners game, so here's what you got to do. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776 in 1 minute if you're listening on the radio, or 30 seconds if you're on the stream. Caller number 4 will win 2 tickets to the Mariners Retro Jersey Night, July 24th. Again, that number, caller number 4, 206-421-3776. That's 206-421-3776. Caller number 4 wins 2 tickets to the Mariners Retro Jersey Night, July 24th. We're giving away a pair of Mariners tickets each hour today, so stay tuned to 710 ESPN Seattle for your next chance to win. Coming up next, we are continuing our most important Seahawks countdown with number 11 right around the corner.